Off top,
platypuses don't have nipples. They just ooze milk from their skin.
Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Platypus? Oh, it's definitely platypuses.
Anyway, welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. That's Charlie Kravis asking questions that he can easily Google because I'm not sure what the answer is. We are joined by our buddy, everybody's favorite analyst, the great Mina Kimes. What's up, bud?
Never been so jealous of platypuses until platypi.
We don't know. Haven't decided. We're going. I say pusses. He says pie.
I would Google it, but I'm deep in the Ryan Chazier memes, so I can't.
Such a problem.
You're gonna tell them why you went with that off top. You want to?
No, I have no reason. No. I went with that off top because I like it. I find they also have a venomous talon. Did you know that?
No, with just one talon?
I believe so. It's just one little spike they stab.
Yeah. It's a literal off top over here sometimes.
I'm just a platypus enthusiast.
People won't understand that joke. Whatever, I'll just reveal it. I don't care. Normalize being a working mom. My pumping station was over here and I had to shove it to the side right before we started taping, and that's why we're getting these jokes out.
Nothing's wrong with it. I just didn't want to be the one to do it. I mean, if you want to share what you're doing with your body, that's all you. That's not for me to share.
Probably best that you didn't share that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want me to say, tell them why. Tell them why. No, I will not tell them why. You tell them why, or we can talk about the Eagles and the 49ers.
You're fine. It would be Pablo. If I was going on Pablo's show, I would never share that. I would not reveal that information. You're fine because we will touch on it. We'll get a joke off and then we'll move to football.
Yeah, damn right.
Pablo's going to ask you to do a share and tell about it. Guaranteed.
didn't hear? And we will touch on it and move to football.
Okay, let's move on. Okay, guys, we have an awesome football game. Yeah, sorry. This is the whole thing about now having to talk where I stop listening to you guys and I start thinking about the next joke I'm going to say. It's a problem.
We'll work on it.
Football. We have an awesome game. We have the 49ers and the Eagles. The Eagles 10-1, winning every single close game. They are home dogs to the 49ers, to which Kyle Shanahan does not agree with that line. I think a lot of fans are confused by that line. But to you guys, do the 49ers deserve to be favored on the road against the Eagles?
Deserve? I mean, who cares? I don't know. I get the
this way, is to, a, way to cut the legs out
no,
of the
I'm
question.
Not, I'm not cutting the legs out of the question. I'm saying, who cares whether they deserve it or not? The point is, are they good enough? Yeah, they're good enough. And I think it's combined with like the rest disadvantage that they have. I don't know. I think the game is interesting enough, making them the favorites. People are making bulletin board material. At this point, nobody cares about this. These are two teams that are going to play in the playoffs at some point, most likely, and have played last year and have some bad blood that apparently Bradbury's not sure about, but Deebo Samuel has it for him anyway, because they interviewed Bradbury and he was like, I don't know why he says I'm a bum, but I mean, he says it. I don't care. I have faith in myself. But
that's such a good way to handle being called a bum, is like, I don't care. I don't know. That's just James Bradbury. Well done. Sorry. Just wanted to say that.
I mean, you wouldn't advocate for an aggressive internet clapback, which is what Mina Kimes is known to do.
No, the move is the John Hamm in Mad Men. I don't think about you at all. That's the move. And he pulled it off.
Perfection. I wish you would take that advice when I give it to you, because you go for next on my behalf, which I appreciate it. But I also was like, hey, ignore those fools. All right, Mina. So who's going to win? Tell me so I can bet on it.
I'm going to, because I respect Charlie, I'm going to respect the question and actually address it. I do.
Charlie pissed me off today. Charlie showed up here at 1:31 for a 1:30 record. Anyway, go ahead, Mina.
I think that they're right to be favorites. I've thought about this a bit because I do think these teams are very evenly matched. This is, as you said, very likely a championship preview, depending on how things shake out. They are the top, the creme de la creme of the NFC, along with probably Dallas. However, when I was doing my matchup preview on my podcast, Mina Kimes Show, which Dominique features on for this week, I found it instructive because as I was looking at the matchups and thinking about this game, I found myself approaching it from the standpoint of how do you poke holes in the 49ers? Whereas with the Eagles, I was like, okay, here are the issues with this team. Sometimes in the first half, the offense feels a little bit disjointed. Defensively, I would attack the middle of the field, linebacker, which Kyle Shanahan's obviously the master of. There are issues. They're a very, very good football team, but there are flaws. Whereas with San Francisco, you have to like really dig around to try to find the things that the Eagles can attack. And I think they can. I want to be clear. But if you're thinking about it from the standpoint of do they deserve to be favorites, I think the fact that you're constantly in that position with the San Francisco 49ers trying to find their very few weaknesses is revealing of why Vegas favored them, even though they're on the road.
Yeah, it boils down to, I think, a lot of our reason why we feel confused by that is because the quarterback, we obviously trust Jalen Hurts more. It's the quarterback. I think it's the pedigree of the team, having been to the Super Bowl last year and what we've seen them do recently, and they're at home. But all those things, I think you could go either way on this bet, but it makes for a really exciting, interesting game. The big question about the 49ers, or at least the one criticism that you can level against the 49ers fairly, is we haven't seen their quarterback in the late game heroics the way that we've seen Jalen Hurts. I was doing some prep for this, looking up stats of non-play action passing for Brock Purdy. He's still pretty damn good. But the question is non-play action passing when we know that's what you have to do and you're down, and you're down one of your playmakers or your tackle. Those are the next steps that we haven't seen from him and Kyle Shanahan, to be fair. If we're going to give Shanahan all the credit for scheming the offense, you better scheme up some in these tough situations too.
Yeah, but he's not missing anyone, right? At least unless I forgot right. Something. I think everybody's playing. And to your point, though, this is exactly it. During the losing streak and whatever, there were some turnovers, but also I think, and this is true of all Kyle Shanahan and his trees offenses, they look different when they fall behind. I think the question is, are the Eagles capable of going up on them, especially again, given how that offense has looked in some recent game early throughout the season? I think they're capable of it. I think if they really commit to running the ball, controlling the line of scrimmage the way they're capable of against a slightly sus San Francisco run defense, then I think it could get interesting. But they cannot fall. Philadelphia cannot fall behind. You cannot fall behind to this buzzsaw.
That's fair of everybody.
Also, isn't it kind of fair that, I mean, obviously Purdy was worse without Trent Williams, Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel. But Jalen Hurts has also struggled without Lane Johnson. So it's kind of just an underrated part of it. If you're missing one of the best offensive linemen in the world, your protection gets worse.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's probably recency bias, but he didn't struggle without Lane Johnson last
week. Second half.
So, like,
yeah,
I mean, he led an immaculate game-winning drive in those moments. So, like, I think you're right. Over the course of the entire game last week and over the course of his entire career, it matters. That O-line is incredibly special, and I do think, I mean, as cliche as this is, the matchup to watch.
That's what I was...
O-line versus D-line, 49ers versus Eagles.
I was going to ask about that specifically, because since the Chase Young trade, the 49ers have actually gotten home to the quarterback, but the Eagles aren't like a normal offensive line. Do you expect that to continue? Are the 49ers going to be able to get pressure?
I think it depends on whether or not they can get him into third and longs. And this is, again, where for the Eagles, it's so important for them to keep the chains moving. That I think it's a mixture of the run game, the RPO game, not just taking shots and missing them on early downs and suddenly being in situations where that four-man rush can tee off. They're perfectly capable of doing this. I talked about this a little bit with Ruiz on my pod, like what's different about the Eagles this year, because the offense, like the underlying numbers are all still just as good, yet fans are like constantly in a state of fury about Brian Johnson, the offensive coordinator, versus their previous offensive coordinator. And I think some of that is really overblown and unfair. I think actually Johnson's done a good job, but I will say one thing I really want to see him do, something that I thought Steichen was really good at, is finding the weakness in the defense and then just hitting it over and over. The Eagles are so good at that last year. And I think in this game, if they can do that, if they can really exploit some of the very minor holes on this 49ers defense, they can stay out of those third and longs and keep Jalen Hurts upright.
I mean, embarrassment of riches feels like a dumb term many times, because who's embarrassed when they have a bunch of great stuff? But I think that could be a problem with the 49ers. With the Eagles at times, is you feel like you have the capability to do so many different things, which would suggest that, you can adapt to any situation, attack anywhere. But it also feels like there's something about, this is what we do. We're really good at this. And after this doesn't work, we do that.
because it builds on it. And it doesn't feel like we see the one thing that they're really good at. And if there is any one thing that they're exceptional at, I think it's the quarterback run, which we all get the problems that are inherent in having a quarterback run a lot, especially one that's playing with a knee brace right now. But I still think obviously it's going to play a big role in this game. And Fred Warner's ability to track down Jalen Hurts, he's a great athlete. But that's why they got to attack the middle of the field. And the tight end health is going to be a concern. And on the Eagles side, they need to attack the middle of the field behind Fred Warner in order to keep him from attacking that quarterback run game.
Dominic, you remember the last time these teams played, Fred Warner being immobilized by the quarterback run game, the RPO, all that, basically the option football aspect of the Eagles offense. If they can't, like, I really think they need to lean heavily into that. That's, you can't beat Fred Warner with players, because he is the best cover linebacker in football. He is an incredible tackler. He is so good against the, he's good at everything, right? However, you can beat him with concepts. You can beat any linebacker with concepts, because it's so hard to play linebacker against these both of these offenses because of the optionality of what they do in the backfield. So Philadelphia, if they have to be as good at that as they were at the end of last year. And I think that is something that's been a little bit up and down this season, the option, the RPO stuff.
All right, next topic. The most interesting award to me. If the season were to end today, who would you give Coach of the Year to?
All right, so I'm not going to overanalyze this just yet.
I can give you the odds if you want.
Oh, yeah, run down the odds.
Dan Campbell is the favorite, plus 175. D'Amico Ryan's plus 400. Mike McDaniel's plus 600. Kevin O'Connell and Shane Steichen plus 1,000. Mike Tomlin never won the award, plus 1,600. And Sean Payton, plus 1,600.
Okay, my immediate reflex is to go D'Amico Ryan's, but I'm going to overanalyze this even though I said I would not, because the award, it's a lot like the MVP in that it's not that clear, and it's less clear than MVP, because at least value like has some like more certainty to it. Like you can measure value in a bunch of different ways. The Coach of the Year is it who had the best scheme like advancement? Is it the team that was the most, that achieved the most, or the team that achieved more over was expected, or the team that, or the coach that dealt with adversity the best? Like, it feels like, yeah, you gave me the point, Mina. I know which one you think it is.
It is that. That's what, I mean, what it's been more often than not over the last 10 years or so is the coach who came into a team that was either not expected to be good or was bad last year and turned things around. It is a narrative award. To your point, that's why it's kind of interesting, because it's soft. You're not analyzing actual performance. You're analyzing storylines. Where I think it is interesting, though, is if you start from the premise that that's how the award is, so you take out probably Mike McDaniel, Dan Campbell, expectations were pretty high for that team. Yeah. Probably should have gotten it last year. You know, it's like, whatever. But anyways, to me, it's down to D'Amico Ryan's and Shane Steichen. I think those are the two best candidates. I love the odds for Steichen there, by the way.
That's what I was. And see, the thing with Steichen is, and O'Connell probably. Well, actually, it's not O'Connell as much as it's Brian Flores. But if we want to do the nerdy football thing and say, who has shown us like some impressive schematic innovation in their situation, I would say that is Brian Flores and also the head coach there, O'Connell, and Shane Steichen, who's found ways to be productive with uncertainty, I guess, at quarterback position. But that's not who we give the award to. Who's your pick, Charlie?
Mike Tomlin. All he does is win football games, and he won football games with Kenny Pickett and Matt Canada. That is Vince Carter winning the dunk contest with a weighted vest on. And he's never won the award, so it's a lifetime achievement award.
The problem with that is that he was involved in selecting and keeping both of them. So this is Vince Carter deciding to put on a weighted vest before he participated in a dunk contest.
I guess, but also he's in your beloved AFC North, which is apparently a tough division. And if you look at their schedule, they're about to end up at 11-4 because they're playing the Cardinals, the Patriots, Colts, and Bengals.
What's their point differential? Is it still negative?
Probably. I'm not sure. Narrative award for me.
It is for all of us, but that's a bad narrative.
I would probably give it to Ryan's, not just because, I mean, I think the pushback against him would be like, well, CJ Stroud is awesome, but I think when you watch them, he's nailed his hires. I think Bobby Slowick's done a really good job with them. And not only on both sides of the football are they playing much better. Obviously, some of that is because of talent also on both sides. But it's a really very obvious culture turnaround. Mm-hmm. The defense isn't great, but when you watch them, they play hard, man. Like, it's like they hit, they tackle. You can see the track of the improvement. And then offensively, obviously, we've talked a lot about what they've done with Stroud and the players that they have. Some players who were already on their roster. So that feels more like an organizational turnaround. That's pretty special. But, you know, Steichen, I think, is really in the mix because if you watch Colts games, Gardner Minshew is not a good quarterback. And the fact that he's putting together these, stacking these wins and that the offense is efficient is like a real testament to what he's doing there.
Yeah, I think Mike Tomlin is the most interesting one there to talk about because you made the case for both of those other guys, both of the guys that we brought up, very clear. And I think the D'Amico Ryans thing, we talk about culture a lot here, and it's hard to measure if you're not there or not, but it's hard to attribute it to anybody else or anything else down there considering the history of the Houston Texans. And one major thing changed, I guess you could say the quarterback too, but as far as a rookie quarterback is not going to influence the way that the entire organization is running. It feels like,
I don't know, if CJ Stroud goes one and Bryce Young is their quarterback, no chance of winning coach of the year. Zero chance.
Do we not give credit? Well, who knows? But do we not give credit to him for that development? I know he's not an offensive coach, but like he's the head coach.
The culture is a huge part of it.
And he's making the decisions that set him up. Before we get off of this, I need you to defend your Mike Tomlin thing. So what is the story? What's the story? Because like
minus 23.
No. I don't want
point
stats.
Differential for
you
the
said,
record.
You said, oh, okay, yeah.
I just want to put that out there. That's not defending my.
But I guess, so I would say that Shane Steichen, it's schematic. And for.
Do you think, so you're talking about D'Amico Ryans being a cultural change. You don't think the winning culture instilled by Mike Tomlin is the reason that they're winning these games?
It's not a change.
The winning culture that let Matt Canada stick around past his due date. That was Mike Tomlin, dude. I love Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin, notoriously loyal guy. I think like he gets heat for that decision.
Definitely, but I'm trying to defend it here.
No, I mean, I get it. Okay, so we could argue that. Yeah, but that's not a change in winning culture. That's something that's been there in the entire history of the franchise. We don't attribute Mike Tomlin with coming in. He came in and took over a team that had just won the Super Bowl. So, like, it's not like he instilled the culture. So it's hard for me to understand. Maybe the answer is you don't know.
Well, maybe he should have won it once some of the years when he had, like, prehistoric Big Ben when he was wearing, like, two walking boots and was covered in wraps and couldn't move, and they still went 9-8 or 9-7.
We need, like, a lifetime achievement, like the MVP, the MTV Moon Man, how they give out that. I can't believe I'm using an MTV Movie Award as a comparison here. But you know when they're like a legacy award, like a titan in the industry, they do in certain award shows. We need that for the NFL every year. Just like, hey, let's all acknowledge how awesome this guy is.
Right.
And obviously Mike Tomlin would be.
He gets credit. Center.
There's my reasoning. Thank you, Mina. That's exactly what I meant by all of it.
All right. Thanks, Mina. All right. Charlie's got to go. We're going to talk to Bomani Jones. Mina's gone too. After that, we're doing Roses and Thorns. Swimsuit. Check. Sunscreen. Check. Phone charger. Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, welcome in the great Bomani Jones. If you want to catch the beginning of this conversation, you can go over to The Right Time. You probably already listened to that. But anyway, I found out his parents, All-American basketball players.
we
talked about our buddy Cooper, who is enduring some racial profiling right now. I should hit up. So Cooper DeJean, the cornerback from Iowa, is what we just talked about. But I haven't hit up Phil Yates. I should hit up Phil Yates because I assume that somebody told him to put him at safety. I don't think that Phil just decided, because this is the first time you and I have been waiting to see when it's going to happen because we knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And this is the first time we've seen it happen.
I think it will be that early, and I didn't think it would be him.
But somebody had to tell him. Like, I don't think that Phil, I mean, Phil played football. He knows football, but I don't think he's the one that looked at Cooper DeJean and was like, nah, that explosive athlete ain't no corner. Put him at safety.
No, like, that, where we need him is at a less important position.
Did I think I put you on onto Connor Flagg before he blew up. Like, he blew up at Peach Jam, but my brother-in-law put me on him. He's special. He's another guy. But we don't have that same problem right in basketball, do we?
Like, in basketball, it's more provocative. You know what I mean? Like, it comes with more. The difference is, in basketball, nobody's telling the good white basketball player not to play basketball. They're actually telling him he's better than he actually is. with the white quarterback, they out here trying to squelch his dreams, and I just don't get that.
Yeah, that's not fair. But anyway, from Iowa college basketball to another, I mean, I guess Colorado's the Midwest, not really.
It's Midwest-ish.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in Denver, people certainly didn't consider themselves Midwest. But anyway, we're not going to Denver, we're going to Boulder. So SI named Deion Sanders with a piece of, I guess, genius marketing. They named Deion Sanders Sportsman of the Year because obviously you're going to get me to click on it when that happens. Pat Ford wrote it, who I do not believe is AI, so don't worry about that. We're not talking about AI articles. But it had some interesting questions that I wanted to bring to you. It's not about all the other Deion stuff that we've talked about, but it's more about the role of college football to a university, which is then the role of college football coach. Because in this piece, Pat Ford makes the case that Deion Sanders is the Sportsman of the Year by citing a bunch of statistics that aren't wins and losses, which is normally what you think of as sportsmen. So I'll rattle a couple off for you. The first one he puts in there is first-year applications are up 26.4% year-over-year. African-American applications up 80%. International applications, 38%. And he talks about how the sales from the online school stores up 25,000%. And all the games are sold out, blah, 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 blah. And how Deion Sanders or Boulder's convention for visitors, or yeah, the Boulder Visitors Bureau says that they estimate that the impact for the home games is $77 million up. And that's the argument for he's the Sportsman of the Year.
So one thing I have been told in my travels in this business is a great way to win Sportsman of the Year is to tell those people that you'll show up to the banquet. And Deion will absolutely show up to the banquet. Like, you telling me that I'm going to get the cover of Sports Illustrated and I just got to show up and eat? All right, cool. I'm definitely going to do that. Sportsman of the Year is, at least for me, very similar to the Time Magazine Person of the Year. What we need to keep in mind here is not necessarily about, like, your greatness or how, you know, it is how basically how interesting you are, like the role you play as a man of your time. And I was a little salty to see Sports Illustrated do this because I've been dancing around or bouncing around in my head a way of writing something very similar to this, the idea of Deion as man of time. And he fits it in so many ways. Like, there's nobody's been more interesting in the sports space this year than Deion Sanders. Like, I can't name any. Georgia is, how many games in a row has Georgia won? Like, we got to be
29, maybe?
Like, 29, something crazy like that. Yeah. How many players on that team can you name? You can't.
None.
You can't.
I can describe a couple.
Yeah. Like, but you can't do it. Like, there's there are individual compelling personalities out of college football this year. They're not there. And when you look around and just try to think of what are the things that have held our attention in sports this year, I can't think of anybody who's done it quite like Deion has.
Yeah, you're right. It's like the Time Man of the Year where they will put someone who is terrible on the cover just because their impact on the year was so significant, or the impact of the time was so significant. And Deion, yeah, you can't argue that anybody like did or had more of an impact on the like sports zeitgeist this year than Deion, because at the beginning of this year, had all types, like we couldn't not talk about him. And it was on news shows. It was on everything. And the impact that he had on that I was going to say on that school, but it's not just the school. It's on college football and the conversations that it evoked and the reaction that it evoked from a number of people. In the article, he talks about the black people of Boulder and how they feel more emboldened and empowered, all 13 of them outside of the school, which is, I think, only 3% black. But his impact there and what he represents there is always going to be intertwined with what he did at the HBCU, and it's always going to be intertwined with blackness in religion. Religion and blackness are the two things that he like overtly plays on. I think if I remember correctly, he cited George Floyd as one of his motivations at Jackson State. So I was trying to go in the direction of figuring out what we expect from our college football teams, having been on Maryland's campus when our basketball team won the national championship, our football team was good, and we won the ACC championship, and we saw the impact that it had on fundraising and the impact it had on admissions, and not just admissions of students, also attracting professors. Like, Maryland climbed. It wasn't a coincidence that it climbed in, like, competitiveness academically. It was not a coincidence that it happened alongside the sports teams being the best that they had, or the important sports teams, I shouldn't say that, the most popular sports teams, because we're good at a lot of other things, but don't nobody show up, don't nobody write no checks.
Nah, I mean, especially with Maryland, you guys are a basketball school, right? Like, that is, at least in that time, that died in the wool ACC team. Now you're in the Big Ten with this kind of loss and no friends, but you know that kind of happens sometimes, right? but those things matter. They do. The question for me with Deion is, even with him being Sportsman of the Year, nobody's taking what he's doing seriously. Like, that was a wave, and we paid attention to the wave as the wave was going on. But if you look at the way that season ended over there, it ain't looking good right now. There's no real reason for optimism, truly. Like, and to me, it's not about the decommitments that they're getting, because their plan has been to get guys through the portal anyway. Like, they had a small class to begin with, but the fact these guys are leaving, to me, is probably connected to the fact that Tim Brewster is his chief recruiter, and Tim Brewster is now leaving, and he's leaving to go to Charlotte, North Carolina Charlotte. They play at Charlotte, but the University of North Carolina at Charlotte 49ers. That dude is leaving a Power 5 job to go do a similar job at Charlotte. And I've looked at Tim Brewster's Twitter profile. Tim Brewster has a tweet that reads from November 28th, "I promise I ain't hard to find." That sound familiar? You know what I'm like? All I'm saying is, whatever Deion was trying to do, they took the play calling away from the offensive coordinator, and then he couldn't come out in front of people and say who it was that was calling plays. I think the defensive coordinator's leaving also. There's some stuff going on here, and I don't know how exactly it goes, but at a program that we take seriously, people would have approached this with a lot more scrutiny. And so even after they started so well, and then it all, you know, understandably, physical attrition and everything else, they wore down as the year went on, but people ain't even bothered to pay enough attention to come dance on the grave anymore. It was like this was a thing that we was doing, and then we stopped. Like, by the time I've been Sports Illustrated made the decision to make Deion Sportsman of the Year, and where we are now, the number of eyeballs that have been ported to their program is so much different, and I'm wondering what it's going to take to get them back.
It's interesting because the argument that you make for Deion Sanders Sportsman of the Year, as I mentioned, it's all off the field stuff, and that's probably because that's how you had to make it. And any article that you read, so in preparation to talk to you about this, like, I read a bunch of the articles about him and that have come out recently, and they all point back to that time that they beat the defending national championship runner-up team, who also is not very good this year. So, like, it's hard, and they can also point to they had one win the year before, and now they have four, which is an improvement, but it ain't the type of turnaround that gets you Sportsman of the Year unless you are Deion Sanders. So all this other stuff that's happening around the institution is Deion Sanders because he's Deion Sanders. And you're making the point. I was going to ask you, essentially, is this something that can last if they don't get to greatness? But you're making the point that it's over already.
I'm not saying it's over already, but it is tenuous right now.
The one thing that we got really... Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just don't think there's any way around that this started a lot stronger than it ended, and the test for Deion is going to be, as is often the test for anybody in these circumstances, man, so what you going to do now? Like, this has gotten hard. What you going to do now? They talked a lot early because they had exceeded those expectations. But any of us with eyes who were actually paying attention to those games and teams understood that was not sustainable just because they didn't have the bodies in order for that to be sustainable. Physically, they weren't going to be able to do it. Shedeur Sanders couldn't make it through the whole year because he was getting the hell beat out of them so bad because of where they were at the line of scrimmage. Like, it takes a lot to build a college football program. And they're trying to do it at a place that has literally no built-in advantages.
And what do you, so a lot was made of Deion Sanders' ability to recruit because he is Deion Sanders and he's already incredibly famous. And it had to be cool to show up to those games because there are people on the sidelines who are interested in participating at college football games that would not anywhere else. Even like The Rock, who went and played football at Miami. When last time you seen him on the Miami sideline? He damn sure on the sideline at Colorado. And all that is flashy and sexy, and that may have given you the advantage pre-NIL.
Yo.
And Deion is a black man who's very cool with a lot of jewelry on, who has the heart of a 1970s college football coach.
Yeah.
So I think the players see through that, and all that other stuff ain't worth nothing when there's actual real money being handed out.
Yeah, and I thought that Deion got a bad rap when he said the thing about how, look, you ain't gonna get rich coming here. That was not Deion saying we refuse to pay you. That was Deion saying, bro, we ain't got it. Like, the money it takes when the numbers you're hearing, and all the money is at the high end anyway. Right? Like when Matt Rhule talks about there, these quarterbacks making $1 million, $2 million, whatever it is. A, those deals look like they're horrible for guys. But two, that's all on the high end. We did something on Game Theory about this. The average NIL payment per player is actually very, very low. But Deion's probably right. Colorado doesn't have the money that's going to be able to. You're not going to go there to get paid right now. It's probably not going to work out for you. They don't have that kind of bread. And that's going to make things difficult for them in a lot of ways, but for a lot of players.
I mean, this is where we always end up with a lot of these college teams, is why there becomes, why college football, I think, can cripple an institution and also like catapult an institution, is because it requires money to invest into something like that to be successful. The rewards are there. Like, it would make sense for Colorado to skinny up that budget in a bunch of different places and invest wholeheartedly in this based solely on the evidence that they've had from the success, the minor bit of success that they had this year. But the scary thing is, if you continue to do that and then you don't have the success, then you just dug a hole for your institution that they can't get out of. And some schools are shutting down their programs because of decisions just like that.
No, they don't have the booster class that has the money. Right. Right. Yeah. So like, it's going to be fun watching what goes on in Miami, for example, because during the pandemic, all of a sudden we heard that they had all these billionaires that they didn't have before. And I know enough about Miami to know them people ain't billionaires no more. Like, whatever it was that got them to be billionaires, the way that was being phrased, that wasn't forever money. That wasn't what that was.
I want to get your thought on this last thing that just creeped into my mind as we were talking about this. As I'm thinking about the need for money to have success and the benefit that it has on the institution, but also not having the alumni base or the booster class to support that, with a person who is as famous and as marketable as Deion Sanders, does it not make sense to go outside into like the natural business world and like attract an actual sponsor? Like, I know he does these KFC commercials. Why wouldn't somebody like KFC become, I don't know, you can't call in a, I don't know, Colorado KFC Buffaloes, or put emblems on their jersey?
Can they start selling Buffalo buckets?
Buffalo buckets. But I mean, seriously, like, the benefit, if all they need is investment, because this is like, presumably this is like a home run startup, but they can't find the investors. I get the idea that it may not succeed, but all the good, all the positive press that KFC would receive from doing something like this, and if it's an actual success in Colorado, don't have to find a booster class. Like, let's get serious about this. It's professional sports, and sooner or later they put in patches on jerseys. It's just gonna be who the first one that is gonna be allowed to do something like that.
I think there's something to that, and this is where we get into a discussion that you're going to hear more of, that has already started, but you're going to hear even more of, which is private equity creeping into college sports. and that's the arguments that you're making is what we're going to get. And I would just like to ask the question one more time. Remember that time private equity made something better? I don't.
Once. It don't matter, though.
Not a single time.
It don't matter.
I'm telling you, it's coming. This is going to be the death knell of it. But what you spell out, you basically, that is the goal, I mean, the good intention pavement of the road to hell. It's right there.
The intentions aren't even good, though. In this case, it's just like, we want to beat everybody and we want to make a lot of money.
The intentions are good in the sense that they're going to put some money in some people's pockets that may not have got the money otherwise.
Yeah, they're not going to get as much as they deserve, because if you don't have any power in this situation, you don't have any leverage. And no, they don't have any power and they don't have any leverage.
No, they're getting jerked now.
They're
going to
get jump change in comparison.
Yep. They're getting jerked now and people don't even realize it.
Maybe 5 or 10 quarterbacks going to make a ton of money, but that's going to be the end of that. Anyway, that's the great Bomani Jones. I appreciate it. As I mentioned before, you know where to check him out the right time. All right, talk to you next week, brother.
All right, man, appreciate you.
Up next, Roses and Thorns.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
How has Dominique been lately?
Bad or good?
Let's find out. This is Roses and Thorns.
All right, time for your favorite segment with my favorite person, Roses and Thorns with Ashley. You look nice today. Very nice. I was wondering,
you so much.
I got a question for you that I'm sure you're not prepared for, but you look nice often, and it's always new stuff. And I noticed when I was on your computer yesterday to find something, you told me to find something.
That was for Christmas shopping.
You told me to find something. And no, it's not a judgment. It's just that your email, you actually go to the promotions folder and open the promotions folder in your email.
I don't.
I've never opened a promotion folder.
I don't. Actually, it's because I don't have a filter on my phone. So sometimes on my phone, they'll get me. I actually texted my friend today who has a similar habit. And I was like,
shopping habit?
Yeah, particularly with these stores, perhaps. For some reason at the holiday, I shop at J. Crew more than normal. Like, they have good stuff for the kids and for me. And, like, I like their gloves and a lot of their winter accessories. And it's always 50% off, like, from, like, November through January. I mean, every other day it is. So it's like, don't shop on the one day it's not, right? And then Estelle's Colored Glass, which, like, we have so much of. Like, you've seen, I unpack. And I got emails from them today that I guess probably on my computer would have been in promotions, but on my phone, like, it's not sorted. And, of course, I clicked them. And I was like, they really need to stop emailing. They know how often I, like, buy it. It's, like, predatory. Like they released like two new colors or something, and I'm like, whoa.
I don't understand how we have so many sets
of
hats.
This is old. Like, these pants are old. These boots are old. This sweater is previously unworn. It is new. Okay, it just came. But
so it's new. Our house is already decorated for Christmas, and I guess people will see this on December 1st, so it's not as weird. But immediately after Thanksgiving, you have two trees up, and it's too Christmassy.
Listen,
it's just absurd.
This year Thanksgiving was a little bit early.
So?
So
need to
I
wait
noticed
till December.
That. I know, but here's the thing. Our daughter, our biggest child, turns 13. We're about to have a teenager, guys, tomorrow when this airs. Her birthday's December 2nd. And I like the house to be, like, decorated by her party, because her party is, like, always, like, early December. I never do birthday parties before the birthday. I always push them to after. Well, except for 1 year during COVID, I needed to be warm so they could watch movies in tents outside. And there was a warm.
How many birthday parties did you have as a kid?
So my birthday was in the summer.
I had two birthday parties my entire childhood. Like, I don't know why we need to have a party every year for every kid. It's absurd.
Yeah, they think that. and they get it from me. No, I actually told her. So she's turning 13 this year, and she is has a lot of Jewish friends, and so has been invited to a lot of bat mitzvahs. Well, no, but like the bat mitzvahs, her school is just really diverse, which I love. And so she's gone to a lot of bat mitzvahs, and they're huge, and they're so fun. I'm like, FYI, you're not Jewish, but like, we're not, like, you're not having like a big, but I was like, it made her think like, wow, it's my 13th, I need to go all out. And it's like, nope, that's not our faith tradition, like our cultural tradition. Like, you're a teenager, I guess, but no. And so everything she wanted to do, and then she was like, I want to have a big sleepover. And she had the only other sleepover she had was in third grade. And it was like a lot of girls. Like it was like probably like 15 to 20 girls at our house, but their bodies were small back then and they all fit comfortably in our family room. She wanted to have like 12, and now their bodies are like some of them the size of mine. Like she suggested having a sleepover and wrote this list, and it was like 15, 20 girls. And I was like, baby, where y'all gonna fit? Like I was like, show me, lay out 15, 20. But she also wanted to start the sleepover by going out to dinner at too a restaurant in Georgetown and going to an escape room and then just driving them back home for a cookie
I'm
decorating.
Often shocked.
So it was like three parties in one. And I was like, we can't even fit 20 girls in our car.
You are confused at why the kids are maximalists. You want to do too much. You had a Christmas card with three outfit, like it's just you are too much doer, and
I'm
then you raise
doer.
Your kids to
I'm a too much
to
doer.
Be a lot.
I know, but as far as how many birthday parties I had, my birthday was in summer, so like kids were like we were either in Delaware or, but I had a lot of cousins, so like even if I had enough birthday parties, I'm not saying I was denied birthday parties at all, but a lot of my birthdays, which I loved, we were at the beach and it was like a cake with my cousins, and I would pick the flavor, so I didn't have, or like just family dinners at our house in DC, it wasn't, but I had so many kids in our family that it's still, and around my age, that it still felt like a big celebration.
Is Santa working on these Christmas lists? It's something, that's a rose for you. I don't have to communicate with Santa on getting gifts for anybody.
Santa's working on these Christmas lists. The funniest was my almost 13-year-old, 13 tomorrow, by the time this comes out, hers was like, dear Santa, because she's like, I'm going to just play this game. This is the type of list that a teen writes, because I'm a teen now. Basically, it was stuff from Sephora, including makeup. When like I'm like I told her, I was like, Avery, like, what you think? Santa doesn't have to play by house rules. Like, I told you can't wear makeup yet. She was like, I just thought maybe it might be different by Christmas. I was like, no, it's not. So go ahead and cross those off before we send them off to the North Pole. Yeah, Santa's working on these Christmas. So speaking of Santa, I have a gift for you guys. For the podcast. Happy December.
You remember? I'll take it.
Isn't it cute? My mom got it. It used to be behind when he would do like get up recording from home.
It was there.
In winter, I felt like he needed a Christmas set. Like GMA has a good Christmas set. And I was like, he needs something.
Right. For the podcast audience, it's a December 25th coming soon poster with Santa.
It's not a poster. It's actually made of wood.
It's a sign with Santa on it smiling.
Yes. It's so
I like
cute.
It. I appreciate it. I'm going to put it up there. I'll replace Jalen Hurts' picture.
Ooh, we don't have to do that.
Oh, that's the only place it can go. It's the only tall spot for it.
Okay, we'll move Jalen Hurts to where our family
Santa
picture
in front
is.
Oh, so we're replacing the
because
family picture.
Because we have another small family
with
picture.
Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, we don't need both of them right now.
I was never concerned about your Jalen Hurts infatuation until you just threatened to replace the family picture with a picture of Jalen Hurts.
They're two family pictures.
So?
Hey, we just need one. Or move Deion Sanders. Find a way to make it work.
Well, you can't go
the
there.
College season's over. Go
no,
Deion. I love you.
Space. The only
okay,
space
just
I can
rearrange.
Go.
Okay, I will after this is over, I will get up and I will rearrange it because we are keeping Jalen. I love him. Did you guys see his heroic touchdown in last weekend's game?
Stop pretending.
I did see it.
Okay.
I didn't see it like when it happened during the game because I was decorating the Christmas tree, but I saw it. Well, we could like put it here, but I did see it all over Instagram. And his quote afterwards, like, what you want me to say? I was like, just talk. You go ahead. And.
So what do you, how do you feel about me? Actually, it's interesting because you can't use
okay,
the word.
I don't actually
you can't
love
use the word
him.
Love.
I really like him and admire
you don't
him,
know him
as a player, as someone who values the women in his life. And the input of women, as someone who speaks in really cute sayings, as someone who's handsome, okay, as someone who cares about his education, as someone who has good taste in music. So not only did he score a game-winning touchdown in overtime against the Bills. Is that right? That could be wrong. Yeah. And I know they play San Francisco, and people aren't predicting that they're going to win, which is crazy, at home this coming weekend. But not only did he do that, but after the game, he took over the aux cord in the locker room, and he didn't play like the Hype Me Up song or whatever that some people might have thought a 20-some would play. He played Golden Time of Day by Frankie Beverly and Maze. And that made me love him more. Not that that's actually one of my favorite songs, but I love old music and people who appreciate old music and realize that there is no good new music.
Yeah, I'm a big Jalen Hurts fan also for all the reasons that you mentioned. And I mean, his sexiness doesn't work on me as well as it works on you, but I recognize that being cool and being handsome works, but I'm not a fan of the Frankie Beverly and Maze. Like, I appreciate it at the proper functions, and that was clearly a time.
Here's what he's a fan of.
Sexy Red.
So what, yeah, I'll ask you what, exactly. I was so annoyed with him, like legitimately annoyed. Here's his thorn. Here's his thorn.
That's my thorn.
We were in the car the other day. Somehow I was sitting in the back. My daughter was in the passenger seat, and he was driving, and she lets my daughter control the music in the car, so her phone was hooked up to the Bluetooth. I don't. I get annoyed every time I get in, and it puts on her phone before mine. I'm like, turn your Bluetooth off. Mommy's phone gets to be on here. And you played some Sexy Red song.
I told her to play the new Sexy Red song.
That was with our daughter in the car, our not quite 13-year-old daughter in the car. It was so utterly inappropriate. Okay,
this is the most absurd criticism that you could ever have of me in the history of life. Like, when our kids were young, I was playing kids bop. You were playing music that had profanity in it. So now she has complete access to all the music that she wants with any song that she wants with her phone. So, like, it's absurd for us.
I need to change that. I need to set her phone.
It's ridiculous for us to be like, oh, you can't listen to this. No, listen to it. Then talk about what was in it, if we like it. Or is it like, that was the point? It was fine.
Well,
she's all right. She's 13. I can't remember
the name of the song.
Who were you listening to when you were 13? You didn't hear no songs about sex when you were 13?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure I did. Okay,
so, like, stop acting crazy. Like,
so, I know. It was more than it was offending my ears. I was my precious ears do not need to hear this.
Not a great song.
It was, I mean, some people think it's great, I'm sure. I just didn't love it. But so it's her boyfriend, I think, was getting out of jail.
No, she was campaigning to get him out of jail.
Okay, campaigning to get her boyfriend out of jail. And in one line, I don't know if you have to edit this out or not.
No. They know what it means. They'll figure it out. If you want to know, you listen to the song and then
I won't say what the line was. But there was a line there. My daughter's like, why would she was like, I'm going to let him do this. And my daughter said, why is she advocating for him to do more violence? That'll just get him sent back to jail. And I was
about to explain to her that.
No, I was like, turn it off now.
It was a euphemism for something. I was like, acting like these aren't people, whatever. Okay. So,
but it's like, why do you need her to know what that saying means?
Because she asked. And it's not going to hurt her to know. She's going to find out sooner or later. But whatever. The point is, that is my number one stream song. As you notice, everybody's...
It is not.
You notice everyone is putting up their their year-end music streaming. So
it was embarrassing.
Mine is not embarrassing.
What's yours?
Stream,
it's Sexy Red.
It's not Sexy Red. It's that specific song. It's Let My Baby Daddy Out or something. Free My Baby Daddy. It's not because it just
came out.
My
it list, might be by the end of the year though.
Nah, my list is. I mean, it's not embarrassing. I'm not ashamed of it.
I'm a little bit ashamed of my list.
Yeah, I don't listen to that much music, honestly. Like, I listen to mostly podcasts. I looked at the raw numbers, and it's like I really don't listen to that much music. But it feels accurate. Like, my number one is Killer Mike, and then I think two is Drake.
Killer Mike's like activist-y, right?
Yeah.
I don't listen to.
Yeah, Drake, Lil Baby, Moneybagg Yo, and Future. I'm a lover, obviously.
Okay.
Love romantic music.
Oh, Killer Mike's not romantic.
This is called sarcasm.
Oh, well, Drake actually is a little bit romantic, and Future does some Future version of romance songs. So I didn't know if you were being serious. Moneybagg Yo, not so much. So as I was sitting here thinking, Killer Mike, like, what Killer Mike songs do I like? I came up with Mike Jones. Back then, they didn't want me to realize it's not the same person.
So embarrassing. So what are your songs?
Clearly, we have different tastes. Okay, mine are one. Okay, I stand behind most of mine. I think I'm prouder of my like 5 or 6 through 10, 6 through 15. But my top five, one of them I am a bit embarrassed by. It's Drake, fine. Beyonce, of course. Usher. I mean, because we went to see Usher.
Yeah, you had to get primed for the concert.
And I was like, so I make playlists of like my favorite artists. And so I was like listening to like a Usher playlist of like the Usher songs I like with the kids a lot. Now this is Anita Baker's number 5. Stand behind that. Proud of that. This is the one I'm really a little bit embarrassed by. Diddy. But it's really not Diddy. It's like, I mean, artists that were on that. Remember, he had that one album this year.
Are you embarrassed by it because Diddy's not a great artist, or because of the recent allegations? Because
it's a little bit of both.
You can't. I mean, but it's really the allegations are new. And
yeah, I didn't know about this when I was listening to the album. I did listen one last time, honestly, to a couple of the songs I liked after I heard about it. Because the ones I like, there's one that has like, I think just KC from Jodeci on it, and it feels like it's like you're listening to '90s songs, but like, they're new and they're like ones you haven't heard before that sound just like the old 90s songs.
I don't know we probably don't have enough time to get into a full conversation about cancellation, but I feel like I've come to the belief, I mean, cancellation, whatever, is the term, but it's a term that we use to describe like people stop listening to or watching or reading things that are associated with people who've done or been accused of bad things. But the decision that I've come to is, when I turn it on, how do it make me feel? Like, if I don't feel like trash when it's come on, I'm fine with it. If I feel bad, then I don't. So, like, most of the R. Kelly stuff, like, I can get on my high horse and say, I don't listen to R. Kelly. I don't listen to it because anytime I hear it, I start feeling gross.
Yeah.
Like, when the Diddy songs come on, that hasn't happened to me yet.
I'm not going to lie. There are a couple of, like, verses when he gets on. And it's, and like, his rapping isn't the best. Some of the stuff he says in it, and it's like, damn, like, you're ruining Mary J. Blige's song right now by getting on there and saying, like, love me like my first love. And it's like, ew, what were you doing to your first love? Like, I don't want to know. It may be nothing. I don't know. Right. I'm not.
And it's not even, I guess. Settle.
I don't know all the details of everything that's happening with him. But it makes me feel a little weird.
It's not even about how the lyrics happen, because that happens too. Obviously, age ain't nothing but a number. But it's also just about how it makes me feel. So like, Michael Jackson's songs don't have explicit lyrics in them that remind you of anything.
They make me feel happy,
and I don't feel young a certain way about it. So anyway, that's not where I wanted to go with this, but I did notice that Serafina shared with us that her most streamed artist is Sade.
She's so classy.
She's classy. She also shared with us the top 5 from Spotify, or the top 10 from Spotify. And if I didn't, I mean, I already think that I'm out of touch. So
I know. This
just like reiterates it. So it's Miley Cyrus, Flowers. And first thing I thought was, I know Miley Cyrus still putting music out, but I didn't know she was popping to be number one.
Flowers was a really big song.
Yeah, I know. I remember that song. But
I got
this
from my daughter.
Yeah, no, it was a good song. Whatever. Dennis.
I kind of liked it.
SZA, Kill Bill, Harry Styles, Jungkook. I don't even know who that is.
I feel
Lotto. Oh, I know who Lotto is. I don't know. Oh, yeah.
I feel like it must be like Taylor people Swift. Are doing
Metro
age.
Boomin, I know that. 21 Savage, I know who that is. The Weeknd, I know who that is. There we go. That's all one song though.
Yeah. I feel like it's like people our daughter's age who are listening most or something.
Yeah, probably.
Because
she listens to a lot of music. She's a big Tyler the Creator fan.
Oh, isn't she cool and artsy and smart? My like 10 or 6 through 15 included.
You would know that if you let her have the aux cord every now and then.
Good. Included artists such as Lauryn Hill, Luther Vandross. So things I'm proud of, but also Maya. Like how, but I do remember when we were in Miami, I was in like a Maya face.
You're the lone person putting dollars in Maya pocket.
You're welcome, Maya. She's a DMV native. That's
Maya is getting a $2,000 check once a year, thanks to you.
On her vocals, like background vocals to Jadakiss's version of Best of Me, not Jay-Z's Jadakiss's, those get me every time. I could listen to that song, like, which obviously I did like 20 times a day. We have nothing in common with our music, but I'm glad we make our marriage work. Of my artists, who do you like? Well, not Drake, because that was on yours.
I'm not even a big Drake fan. It's just one song, I think, that I just don't listen to a whole bunch of music, but yeah.
Drake's, I listen to so much music.
Drake, I appreciate Drake's Scary Hours. I don't know. I don't feel... Like, I really like Killer Mike because I feel like he's my age and he's into things that I like. The beats were good. Like, I don't know. It's hard for me to get into Drake's love songs or whiny heartbreak songs or like, and so I guess it's me making this argument seems inconsistent with the people that are, the rest of the people on my list because, I mean.
Future Moneybagg, yeah.
I don't got nothing coming with
them.
But Killer Mike, for sure,
that's why
I feel
he's
like
number one.
It hits. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, yeah.
How come, speaking of artists you like, Andre 3000's Flute album wasn't in your top 10?
I tried. I tried to listen to Dre's Flute album, but it ain't here for me. It just ain't for me. I want it to happen. And then people starting to rap over it now, which just makes me sadder.
Oh, really? Like,
yeah, people starting to rap over the Flute album. Yeah. On that note.
Of my artists, though, besides Drake, if you had to like go see,
who are
one
they?
Of
so
them.
Beyonce, Drake, who else?
Well, and besides Usher, because you already saw Usher. So like Anita Baker, Maya, Beyonce.
Yeah, it's probably Beyonce.
Really?
I mean, who else is on there? There's nobody else that I would want to see.
Lauryn Hill, you didn't see Lauryn Hill. I drafted her. Well, actually, I have a proposition for you. I have tickets during to see Beyonce's movie.
I'm good.
I don't have anyone to go with. I'm going by myself.
Yeah, right. You'll find someone to go with. Avery will go with you.
I like actually doing things by myself. I'm totally fine with that. I'll give Beyonce that. Somebody was like, my husband's like, you're giving Beyonce more money. This is the least we can give her. A friend of mine was saying, like,
you didn't
my husband,
get to that point.
Oh, I'm sorry. A friend of mine who had bought tickets to the movie was like, my husband's like, really? You already went to two of her shows. Now you're going to give her more of your money? This is like a $14 AMC ticket. Like, all the money we wasted on her, not wasted, but all the money we gave away to her shows. Yes, of course, I'm going to pay $14 to go see the movie.
We have never wasted any money ever in our lives.
No, no.
That was fun. Thank you, Ashley, for joining us. Also, thank you, Mina Kimes, and thank you, Bomani Jones. Oh, and of course, thank you to my man, Charlie Kravitz, and all of our great producers, Megan, Tez, Kevin, Brian, and Podville. You're the best.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.